Welcome to the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan, episode number 59. My name is John Morgan. We are in Curitiba, Brazil. I got my man Cole Coffee back with me. He has joined me on the road, and none other than Fernanda Praches.
That was good.
That was better, right?
You got it right, yeah.
I tried.
God, we're improving. Oh, God.
I kind of like it when you mess it up, though.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's almost
become your thing.
I've been screwing it up on purpose. I can say that shit.
You got this.
No, I haven't really been screwed up on purpose. I have no idea. I've just had enough practice this week, so we're good. So, let's just get right to it. We are here for, of course, UFC 198. We are throwing you right into the fire, Fernanda. This is your first week on the job, basically. I think this is like day number 8 for you. So maybe
not even
is,
that. Actually, day number 7, yes.
So there you go. Literally the first week on the job, yep. and you're right here in the middle of it, in the event. You've been around Fight Week before. As we said a long time before, you've done, you worked for UFC PR for a while. Yeah. You worked for Globo, the broadcast partner of the UFC. So it's not like Fight Week is something new to you. But doing it from this angle, from this side, what's the experience been like for you?
It's totally different. It's funny because I've done, like you said, so many different things. Like my first on-site coverage was for UFC 134 in 2011. And I was actually working, what was I doing then? I helped write this column for an MMA area of a newspaper, and I just basically went to watch because I wasn't really doing anything with the event. And then the second one was already as a PR person. And then it's just kind of like, I probably have like 5 different types of credentials like stored in my house. And this one has been entirely different, but I've been enjoying myself so far. It's been great.
That is good to hear. Well, Cole Coffee, glad to have you back, my man. We missed you in Rotterdam. I hope you enjoyed your week off.
It was nice. It's good to be back though. Good to be back with the team. Good to be back on the road as much as we enjoy our time at home when we can. It was nice to sit back and kind of watch you guys do your thing, and I gave my liver a break, which is always good. And it's good to pick back up, and it's great to be back to Brazil. I know we've long documented and said my issues about trying to get a visa and get down here, and and finally to have that and be able to get in the country and really have no problems getting in and doing work. So no, it's been great. Happy to be here, and happy that we're able to do this show and have decent enough internet, I'm sorry, knock on wood.
Don't start talking too fast, man. Don't start talking yet. Well, I do want to throw this out there as we sit down to record this. Today is my son's 4th birthday. I am missing my son's 4th birthday, which sucks. We did go to Disneyland. We had a nice trip about it. We had a birthday party, so it's not as if we didn't celebrate it. It's not as if he didn't have a bunch of toys and gifts and all those wonderful things. But I will say I did talk to him a little bit this morning right before open workout started. And I'm not going to lie, I started crying a little bit while I was on the phone. Even though I knew for a long time this was going to happen, it definitely impacted me a little bit. So it was all the feels. It was an emotional day for me. But that's behind me now. I've got a nice frosty bottle of Skol, which is the Brazilian common man's beer. I believe you were afraid to even order
beer.
It for us.
It's can we say shitty in the podcast?
You can say shitty.
Well, see, what's crazy, because I don't think it's shitty.
Beer.
I don't think it's that
it's
bad.
It's the worst beer, guys. People make fun. When I grab, just for you guys listening to this, whenever I go to the bar and I ask for Skols, I get a dirty look. And then I have to like clarify that they're not for me. They're for the gringos who, for unknown reasons, actually enjoy this.
Well, part of it is budgetary restraints. Let's be honest. This is a frosty. We are here right now speaking. We are at the Host Hotel, the Four Points by Sheraton, in here, Curitiba. So obviously, if the UFC is picking a hotel, it's a nice hotel. And these are like $2 beers.
The dollar is like 1,000 reais now. Like, don't even try to pull that on me, John Morgan. Like, it's not gonna happen.
But I'm telling you, we've been in Rio before, and Skol's been one of the ones we've thrown in rotation. Because I know we'd go to the little market, and they're cheap. But I mean, we'd stock up on like 24
of them. Original. Yeah, original is our choice number one.
My favorite.
Original.
Yeah.
I actually would go with Brahma next. I like Brahma.
Brahma's good.
No, Brahma's a nightmare. Like, I'll go with Skol before I go with Brahma.
Now, is Brahma
Bohemia? People say Bohemia was too sweet. I think Bohemia's too sweet. I think it's too sweet.
Is Brahma actually Brazilian or is it a Mexican beer? I see
not,
some.
No, it's.
There's
not
Bohemia
Mexican,
is a Mexican beer.
Maybe
too.
That's the one I'm thinking is Bohemia.
Bohemia is not Mexican, it's Brazilian.
No, there's just a Mexican beer that has the same name. I mean, they're totally different.
Yeah. Oh, so they're different. Yeah, okay. Well, that explains it because every time I'd seen them, I'm like, man, I thought we were drinking Brazilian beers. I was like, we're drinking a Mexican beer. Nothing wrong with Mexican beers. We like
saying,
Mexican beers. Just saying.
Okay, Donald Trump. I hate Mexican beer.
Take all those beers out of the state. I would never say
put
that.
Put them behind a wall.
I would never say that.
All right. Well, let's. You mentioned right there the dollar hay ice. Before we get into MMA, which, of course, is what we will talk about.
Yes.
There is a little bit of political stuff going on. I mean, literally today, the president was removed from office.
He was temporarily removed, and there's – yeah, it's the beginning of a process that we all feel like it's going to end with her being impeached.
When you say temporary, is it literally temporary? I mean, is it did they set a time frame and said, all right, for right now, go away?
Honestly, I have to read up on it because I've been caught up in the craziness. I don't know the exact time of things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like she has a few days to present a defense, and then they're going to figure out if it's a permanent thing. And if she ends up being removed from office, she can't do anything like with politics or whatever for 6 years.
Wow.
And the vice president who, anyway, he's like, he's now like the president, and it's just a sad, sad day for Brazil, in my humble opinion.
Because I think we talked a little bit. Isn't the vice president, the guy that's in charge now, is he from the same party as the guy that put the process in place to impeach the president?
Yeah, it's like the parties in Brazil are more like of a decorative thing for the most part. They switch around a lot. It's not like as polarized as it is with you guys. But her party was PT, was like the workers' party in a literal translation. It's more like it's been associated with like the people in general. But currently they've kind of been selling out a little bit too. I'm not a fan of the government, but the way that things are being run in Brazil for a while now, but she was the democratically elected president, and there is seriously no hard evidence or anything that would actually justify an impeachment process. So that's the whole thing.
Well, I guess the only reason I really want to bring that up is just it did seem like a very odd time for the UFC to say, let's do a stadium show, right? Like, I mean, the economy is – I know when we first started coming down here in 2011, for instance, the highest it was 2-1. Now it's like almost 4-1.
Yeah.
At the time, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, it seemed like Brazil was emerging as this kind of economic power or whatever. And now it seems like everything's kind of restructuring. And I don't know. It seemed like everything was so optimistic a couple years ago. And now – it seems like more people are talking about like economic downtimes, and so it just seemed like a weird time for the UFC to go, let's do a stadium show.
Honestly, I think the UFC events used to cost a lot more because they used to like import everything. Like they had to bring everything from the US. Like the production was all made by the US team. And from my understanding, I might just be talking a lot of crap right now.
But we do that a lot ourselves.
If you say with conviction.
We just make it up. Pretend like we know what we're talking about.
But as I recall, and this is something, this process that I kind of followed when I did PR for them, so I just kind of saw it happening a little bit. There was this conscious process of just kind of like trying to make it as much, like trying to increase the Brazilian part of everything and decrease like what had to be bought and brought over from the US. So the dollar probably doesn't impact it that much.
Makes sense.
I would assume. But so I don't think that would be like the major issue. It's honestly, like people talk, oh, the economy, whatever. Like the Olympics are happening soon.
Right.
Tourism is like, you know, blooming because of that. So
we're reinvesting in the local economy with frosty beverages
here. Yeah, you guys have like doing been a major boost to Brazilian economy because so many beers were purchased. And we've been here for like 2 days.
Yeah.
When you guys leave,
back to the recession.
Yeah, they're going to be statues of you guys, like, going to get keys to the country or whatever.
Well, this is, I think we counted it up, trip number 24 to Brazil, I believe, for myself. That's since August 2011 was when the UFC returned for the first time after many years away. I believe this is event number 24. But this is number one in Curitiba. why do you think it took so long for the UFC to get here? Because this, to me, this has always been, I mean, granted, I'm kind of an MMA dork or whatever, but this has always been kind of a, like a big MMA town. You know, I mean, you just think about Shootbox and, you know, kind of the birth of some of those local organizations and stuff that were there. So why did it seems like a decent enough size town and all those things. Why do you think it took so long to get here?
Honestly, probably, I don't know how the conditions of the arena were, because that's always been a problem for the UFC to have events here, and that I know, because sometimes it just couldn't do them, or sometimes it would cost so much just to, like, adjust the basic expectations that it just wouldn't be worth it. And then you have to do that and, like, combine the stadium, the venue, the timing, the card. So I just think, like, it had never come together until this day. So, and now it did. And the stadium event, as we have discussed, I think it had to be a strong one. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't just fill up a stadium with whatever.
Well, listen, I can remember sitting on an episode of this podcast last year, and you were saying, listen, if they can find a way to get Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort on a card, and we even kind of joked about what if they could get Wanderlei Silva on it, and you were like, dude, put him on there, you know? Right. But I remember you said, if we can get Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort on the same card, and kind of at the time when we said that, I thought – they'd have to be fighting each other, you know, kind of the rematch of the fight that kind of kicked off the Brazilian MMA boom, so to speak. But, you know, never in a million years I think we could put them in different fights. And especially, it's not like they've both been, you know, tearing things up lately. They've had their losses, but they're still superstars. And you were right. They put them on the card and they sold out a stadium instantly.
Yeah, being right is kind of my thing, John. It's kind of a thing that I do. I've been known to be right at occasion. No, but it's like I said, like, their names you can't really compare. The first fight that was announced for this card was actually Vitor and Jacare. And I think we would have been happy with that as a main event. But then, like, things started, like, falling into place. And for a numbered event, of course, they would like to have a title fight like they always do. So, and then they got Verdum, who is making himself known. He's this guy who he puts in the work.
Right.
Like, not only is he the heavyweight champion, which is obviously, like, a very popular division, and honestly, because it's a fight that the casual fan can keep up with, obviously, like, for obvious reasons, but also he's, like, funny. He does a lot of media, and he does it well. He's good with the fans. We've been working with Verdum for a while now, so we know how good he is, like, about interviews and things like that. So it was kind of the perfect storm, because you got the two, like, crowd pleasers with Anderson and Vitor. And obviously, Jacare is actually very big. Like, I think I kind of, like, sometimes I focus so much on Vitor and Anderson, but Jacare has also become a very popular guy. And then you had that, and then you put a title fight, which always adds weight to it. And then, you know, Cyborg obviously being at it. I think it obviously was already a very powerful card, and I think it was already, like, sold out or something when they announced it.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
Because it sold out in minutes. But they managed to put together a card that I think, like, appeals to everyone. The fan, media, casually, and, like, people, the hardcore. So I really like this card for this.
I do, too. I think it's an awesome card. I mean, I've been saying it all along. I really think I'm more excited about this than 200, and I mean that. And part of it might be the stadium show aspect of it, although I am pretty excited about seeing T-Mobile Arena and a USC event in Las Vegas. But I think I'm pretty excited about it. Cole Coffey, I know you've been bragging about this one for a while. Cyborg was one you were looking forward
Cyborg
to.
Cyborg is ready for card. That one. Yeah, I mean, it's a who's who. If you've ever been a fan of Brazilian fighters, just looking down the list, I mean, almost everyone that's on this card is just guys that you're just, like, you respect and that you've watched and love and just adored this whole time. So when they started putting this together, I mean, and this, granted, it was before 200 really started shaping out, but it just pretty much, for me, showed itself to be the premier card of the year. I mean, hands down, I mean, Vitor, I'm a huge, huge fan of Vitor. I mean, besides the fact Anderson, that's just, like, overkill. Those two alone on a card is just sick. And I know, Fernando, you mentioned that earlier. You know, I'm a fan of Verdum. I love Cleveland's own Stipe Miocic. Big, big fan of that.
Y'all been broing it out all week.
He's my bro,
straight
man.
Straight up just Ohio broing it out.
That's the same thing when I see Matt Brown.
Look at your shirt, man. Your hat. Like, what's that's awesome, hat, bro.
He was sporting the Cleveland gear. So if there's any Cleveland people, because, you know, right now, you know, with the Cavs doing their thing, you know, the Indians, well, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, Matt Brown, I mean, he's another Buckeye. I mean, I bro out with all my Buckeyes. I mean, that's the Buckeye Nation, man. That's what we do.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, it's
that's college.
That's
college
how
sport,
out they are.
Oh, college, okay. But. Yeah, I'm not that into American, like the the insides of the American sports culture.
You know, that's how we do it. But, I mean, this car's just got so full of so many guys. And besides the Brazilians, you know, like I said, Matt Brown, there's Yancy Medeiros. I mean, there's so many cats that are on this card. That it's just one of those ones I think that you don't want to miss any fight that's taking place. And I think any card that has a top-to-bottom list of guys that you're like, oh, I don't want to miss this fight. I don't want to miss this fight. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
So here's the thing, and I want to ask you, Fernanda, because I've been doing some interviews with local Brazilian media here, mm-hmm. Just because I'm like the only white dude that they recognize or whatever. They're like, oh, the American that comes down here all the time. Let's talk to him.
Don't give us out of the whole white concept.
No, but tell me, because the question that everybody that I've talked to has been asking is, from our point of view, how does this change with Anderson falling off the card? Because unfortunately, you know, Anderson had the incident with the gallbladder, lost the fight. I think it made sense that they didn't get a replacement opponent for Uriah Hall.
Yeah, it would have been just like, honestly, if it had been Uriah falling off the card, then it would make sense to get an opponent for Anderson.
Just get some random chump for Anderson to
beat
up.
Whatever, they want to see where Anderson fight. How bad can Anderson make
someone look?
Here's the greatest of all time. Here's some dude you never heard of.
But he's going to kick
his ass.
Well, we've seen weird things like that happen.
I know.
Let's get Joe Soto to fight TJ Dillon. Like, you know, just like we've seen stranger things happening. They could bump someone from another fighter or something. It would make sense. But with this one, it's kind of like it would have been.
Well, so from your point of view, because obviously it must be on people's mind, if that's the question they're asking me over and over. And what I told them is, listen, I mean, it sucks. Anytime you get a chance, I mean, to see Anderson Silva, I get it. You know, this is the 40-year-old Anderson Silva, but it's still Anderson Silva. I mean, I was in London a couple of months ago, and yeah, he lost the fight, and I think he actually did lose the fight, but he looked like he could win it at any point in time. You know, I mean, he still looked amazing. So any chance you get to see Anderson Silva, it's pretty damn exciting. But so it sucks to lose him, but I mean, from your point of view, I mean, do you think people are disappointed? Because I look at this card and I think, well, of course it sucks, but the card's so damn good, I don't even think it matters.
No, I think, honestly, the fight that everybody has been waiting for is Jacare and Belfort. Honestly, that's what I get, from random people, not even just MMA media, but, people I talk with, they're excited about it. They're really excited about it. It's interesting for, you know, a number of reasons. So, and I think we actually appreciate the not knowing who to root for thing. You know, it's like,
because it's normally they match up a Brazilian versus
a
foreigner. Because that's what you guys want to see.
It's a very interesting and intriguing matchup for a Brazilian. So I think because the focus was a lot on that, and then everybody's curious about Cyborg. So you had so much going on, and I think it just speaks to the strength of the card that Anderson is out of it. In other occasions, it would have been a tragedy. Anderson's out. Oh, my God. Let's all just weep.
Yeah, should we cancel the event?
And I think it has to do with both the strength of the event and the fact that Anderson's not been in his prime lately. And we've seen in a social media rant by our own Bigfoot, he talks about – he talked about how volatile fans are, and, you know, amidst all the expletives and, you know, weird turns that Rand took, this is actually true. I don't even know, if I can say the Brazilian fan, because you guys have I don't know if the American fan is that much better, but no. I think there is that aspect.
Put him in a body bag.
People got pissed at Anderson after the fight.
That's true.
Because, I mean, a lot of people, they expect this, bulldozer who runs over opponents.
Right.
And then if he seems to be holding back, it's kind of like, we don't like you anymore, boo. So
But he's still the superstar, right?
He is. He's like, people will watch him just to hate on him, yeah. Or not, but like, you know.
Well, I think a lot of people forgot, or maybe a lot of Americans don't realize it, and this is one of the things that I had heard, that after Anderson had lost, but as well after the whole testosterone debacle and all the blue liquid crap, Brazilians liquid. Took that personally because they were pissed off because of his actions. From what I was hearing, Brazilians were mad by how he was handling himself. And they were just really let down. This is from a from what I've heard, Brazilians love winners.
Yeah,
you know, and for the longest time, Anderson was the biggest of winners that you could ever find. But then when he lost, and then to kind of hold himself how he was, I think he let a lot of people down. And I was hearing from multiple Brazilians and different other people that had connections saying, like, Brazilians are pissed at Anderson. Yeah. You know, he's not the name anymore. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, were people really pissed after that whole situation? And is it enough that when he comes to fight, they're like, all right, never mind. Forget all that stuff. You're still Anderson. You know, we still want to see you win. I mean, where's the overall perception of Anderson amongst the Brazilian, you know, just fan base?
When you say, like, I get a lot of flack when I say that, but I say without fear, Brazilians like winners. Like, we don't have a sports culture. We have a winner culture. We like soccer and whatever is
winning. Because you kick ass at it.
Yeah. We did. 7-1. That's all I'm dropping there. 7-1 became like our thing. Anyway, so the main thing is that – so when I say that MMA – and people will argue me on that too. Like MMA is the second sport or whatever. When I say that, I mean that when we're winning, people are watching. It's soccer and whatever is winning. And we had that with Formula One. We had that with tennis for a while there. That was a weird time. And we had that with
didn't know that. Swimming. So you learned something new. Yeah. People learn shit on this podcast.
Yeah, with tennis you had Guga. And then with swimming you had Cielo. So you have like – when you have the big names doing big things, we like them. And then you had Anderson being the big name doing the big thing for a long ass time.
Wasn't any bigger than that.
Yeah, even people who don't like MMA, because let's face it, it's violent in nature. So a lot of people just don't like it. It's fine. Just you do you and we're going to do us. But so Anderson was that guy for a long time. And that's why I say without fear that he was the one who really helped MMA become what it became in Brazil. But and then that's that there's that aspect of just being pissed if the guy's not a winner anymore. And I felt that really strongly with Aldo. And it pissed me off because I feel like we have a tendency to dehumanize athletes. And it freaking pisses me off. They're people. They have their own things. They have bad days. They have good days. Sometimes they're just not as happy. Or sometimes we expect them to conduct themselves in such a way that when they do not, we get like completely disappointed. And obviously that happened with Anderson. It happened when he lost. And then it happened again when he got caught. And you know, and then the whole way that he handled the situation, we've been there, we've talked about it. It was just weird. So I think, like, it ended up becoming kind of like this polarized figure. But yes, answering your question, when it comes to he's going to fight, everyone's watching again. The same with
Aldo. Like everybody just forgets.
Yeah, everybody was hating him because, he's such a loser. Like, oh, he's such a loser. The guy wins at everything.
Once in a decade.
Oh, God. He's such a loser. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What a fake.
Well, I tell you who are not fickle fans, it's MMA Roadshow fans. like the ones that log into iTunes. Like USC Ace. And he said, been a listener since day one. You always got good insight. And you and cold coffee always make the endings of my week great. Thanks. Aww. 5-star review. Or like my man Jax3473, also a 5-star review, said, one of my favorite podcasts.
Aww.
See? Good fans.
Good fans. We should start doing some more like mailbag. But I guess this is like our mailbag version. I know some people are like, we want to send in emails. Will you guys answer? I'm like,
you got to do it on iTunes.
Do that. Well, if you write something on the iTunes, we'll
this is actually
read
some
it.
Good feedback here, but it's kind of bad. It's kind of good. It said, this is GR711. And actually, before I read that, Mike Bond, can you grab us another round of frosty beverages if you don't mind before we bring you on?
That's how big this show is. We got high profile people like Mike Bond chilling in the back.
He said, while this podcast doesn't provide too much content you couldn't already listen to from the press conference yourself. Okay, we do put some press conference footage in there.
That's true.
The personalities of John Morgan and Cold Coffee more than make up for it. These guys are almost cartoonish. I'm not sure if I like that. Hold on. Did I read this? I should have read this ahead of time. I really should have read this.
Are you reading on the fly?
It says, John Morgan has a laugh that makes you want to laugh too. And Cold Coffee's impersonations are hilarious. They're really not.
They're really terrible.
These two have the
that.
Perfect natural journalism and entertaining podcast personalities. I just wish they had more content that I couldn't get somewhere else. Sounds like a challenge to us. Whether that's their own picks and analysis or exclusive interviews, more Cold Coffee's casual conversations. I don't know, but this podcast is definitely worth listening to. See, there was some good stuff.
That's
there was some
awesome.
Bad stuff. All right.
I agree with like what Fernando said. Maybe challenge accepted. Maybe there's find more ways to do it. And it's tough. You know, I mean, the fact that we're even able to do this on a fight week, like fight week schedule is fucking nuts and it's crazy. And I love the fact that we can try to find ways to bring extra stuff that doesn't make it to, say, the junkie side or doesn't make it even out.
Unfortunately, our bosses actually pay for our travel to be here. You know, so if we, like, kind of hang, if we, like, hey, dude, I had this interview with Anderson, and I was going to put it on Junkie, but
we put it on the podcast.
Fuck it. I put it on my podcast.
You know, it's tough, you know, because you're right. We kind of have to find balance things and, you know, decide this goes here, this goes where, and trying to do the other things. But, you know, I like that. It's a good reminder that, you know, we can't take it too easy.
That's
we can't sit back on our laurels and just be like, oh, we got a few five
next thing you know,
star
Conor
ratings.
McGregor's
I want a million five
seconds.
Star ratings. Yeah.
Oh, but like in your defense, guys, and this I say as a listener, because obviously I'm based in Brazil. I can't be a part of the podcast, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Every week, but I listen to you guys every week.
Aww.
Yeah, I do. I miss you guys, and I feel like I'm close to you. And I every now and then I catch myself like talking to you. Like, I can't believe they said that. Oh my God. What? No, I totally disagree. I'll text you. Like, John knows. Like, I'll text John. Like,
that was an A-hole
thing. I can't believe you guys said that or whatever.
But then you got to remind us, because it might be days later. And it's like, what are you yelling at us for? I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
But yeah, that happened. Well, yeah, true story. Next time I'll provide you guys with some context before I start yelling at you. But I do feel like I like the interviews that you guys had. And you guys can touch on things that don't normally necessarily work for a news website. Mm. So, for instance, and this is, I'm biased, but with John, when you guys did talk to Leslie, and then she gave like a very like insightful analysis of like women in MMA. And it's the kind of thing that it doesn't have that much space. And then if you just really stop and listen, it's just exactly like the type of thing that you get in your type of show. And I do feel like you guys provide a lot of interviews and you're
sure.
able to
but
like
we appreciate that. We appreciate
it. No, I think the feedback's
of course,
great. I think it's great to take it as a challenge. Say, yeah, let's keep fucking pushing it. Let's keep finding ways. But that was a great, and it's time you bring up the Leslie thing. That was a great thing. And I loved hearing Leslie talk about that. And she's been great. Mike Bond interviewed her earlier today, and you could check that footage on MMA Junkie.
Not here, though, because we want to bring you fresh stuff.
We got to
bring
you.
That's already on MMA Junkie. So.
But it was a great interview. I thought she was
we'll
in great
We'll have to edit
sorts.
Our layout.
Yeah, she was in great sorts. And she, if you'll see in the video, she came out. She looked beautiful. She had a nice blue dress on.
She actually had a little thing on Instagram to help figure out what she was going to wear.
Oh, really?
She put three options or something the day before. Yeah.
She has this nice short like dress skirt. I don't know what you call those things, and I'm not fashionable.
A dress skirt.
Dress skirt.
No,
and,
you.
I know, right? Same shorts I wore yesterday. But then they had these high seats that they were sitting on. And here,
ooh,
so for the most
part,
she's sitting on the thing. And I asked her, I was trying to be polite. I was like, do you want to stand for when we shoot this, you know, in case you're uncomfortable? She's like, oh, we'll try it. And she did a little side saddle or whatever. Because pretty much for the most part, I mean, her crotch was eye level with the camera. So it was just like, oh.
Don't get that kind of coverage anywhere else.
That's right. How's that for some shit you don't see elsewhere? But no,
see,
I thought
the
Leslie
type of
was great.
Shit that we have to deal with as women in this fucking business. I'm just gonna throw it out there. Because it's good timing. Because I've been getting like a few things on Twitter like that, like talking about being a woman in MMA and kind of, that's how it's like, guys.
It had been like a minute since she said something feminist. It was due. It was due to happen. It was bound to
that's
happen.
The place
I'm glad
to
I could
do
set
do
that
it,
up.
Though.
That was a setup right there. A volleyball pass. Right,
let's talk about UFC 198 real quick before we have to let you go and get Mike Bond on here.
Oh no,
I know
Mike Bond.
Sorry, Mike, your time's been hijacked. Well, let's, I was going to start with the headliner, but let's just start with Chris Cyborg since we were talking about Lizzie Smith. You said it, and I think you're right. I heard you speaking earlier about how kind of intrigued you are at what kind of attention Chris Cyborg has gotten. Now, we had talked before, and you said, listen, I think she's more of a star than you guys realize because she's been fighting at a high level for a long time in Brazil. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely seeing it, and I got to say, I think, honestly, it feels like – maybe it's just me personally. Maybe it's because Cole Coffey's been saying all the time, but I do honestly feel like people are looking forward to this fight as much as anything else on the card.
It's hard to say because we're like in an MMA bubble that we kind of like try to stray away from, but it ends up like sort of like playing a part in our biases, I guess. But yes, people are very excited about it. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like you said, she's been a pioneer. She was a pioneer. And she's been at it forever. And at first, it was kind of like an unseen thing, a woman in MMA. So she would get a bunch of like media exposure and things like that just for the sheer like how do you call it, the sheer like the unprecedented factor.
Woman fighting.
And then I hated those types of stories because they were always like, oh, and she's also very like, she likes to take care of herself, like, do you also paint your nails, lady fighter? And that's that kind of bullshit. But yeah, she got a lot of exposure from it. So she was actually very – so she started off as a famous person. And you talk to a lot of people, they probably have never even seen her fight. And they're going to be like, yeah, Cyborg's a beast. She defeats everyone. She's awesome. And they saw like, what, Gina Carano, and that's it. But so she's popular, and I feel like she kind of stole the show. I said it like before, and I'll say it again. Not in like a – you know, just because – we're interested. We're intrigued. We want to see how that unfolds. People always said that Cyborg was going to be the person to beat Ronda when everyone thought Ronda was invincible. And I think people are very curious to see and want to see her win. We're curious, I think, all of us, to see what's going to happen with the weight thing. Because she can't keep doing like a catchweight thing forever.
Well, that's the whole thing. What's weird is, I mean, I think we're all just excited to finally see her in the UFC. Because they've been talking about it for so long. They're like, great, we're finally going to see her in the Octagon. Fantastic. But it's weird. Like, no offense to Leslie. I mean, Leslie's awesome.
She's awesome.
She is fantastic. And props to her for just being the one to stick her hand in the air and say, I want that fight. Because don't nobody else want that fight. Yeah. But I think we're already thinking, like, what comes next? Like, you know, it's funny because we talk forever, like, can Cyborg make 135? Can Cyborg? I mean, we're seeing her this week.
She's lean as fuck.
She's leaner than I've ever seen her before, and she's saying it's going to be a struggle to make 140.
It's dudes, like, just look at her. It's not her body type. Like, I'm a big bone girl myself. So, you know, I know how hard, like, we're heavier because of our structure. Like, it's the way that our body works. Like, I could never make that weight ever in my life. I would have, like, to cut off a leg. So, you know, and then we talk about how she might just, you know, lose some lean mass, lose some muscle. We've seen it being done. We've seen, like, Toquinho do it. But women have a much harder time losing weight than men. It's just biology.
Right.
It's just, like, how it works. We burn, like, 1,000 less calories a day. So it's just kind of like, you know, it's harder. And honestly, when we talk, we love Leslie, all of us. She's great. She's awesome, yada, yada. But there's a lot more riding on this for Cyborg. If she loses, people are going to bask in the glory of like, oh, wasn't she so great? And then she debuts and she loses. And everybody's going to be like, you know, very quick to dismiss her and just say it was hype or whatever.
I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. If she loses, it's going to be that Ronda Rousey type of backlash where just everybody's like, I told you she sucks.
It's true.
And if she doesn't make weight, it's going to be bad. But if she loses, it's going to be a nightmare. Like, I feel like it's going to be a really sad, I don't want to say ending because we don't know, but it's just going to be like, you know, she's had this amazing trajectory. She's only lost, like, in a Muay Thai fight, like, I don't know, it was 2 years ago or something. Yeah. She's amazing. We all love watching her. And then we build this up, and then everybody's excited. And if she loses, I think it's going to – I don't want to say ruin her, but it's going to be like an incredible setback and a lot of backlash.
It was definitely tough to ever build the hype that she's
And if Wesley loses, what's going to happen? Like, yeah, nothing. Whatever. We are all expecting that to happen.
The respect for you for getting in there, and that's about it.
So, you know, that's kind of like, we love Leslie, but I'm rooting for Cyborg for the plain factor that it's kind of like, it would suck so much more for her to lose in Leslie than to kind of like have to go with her in that one.
Co-main event, Vitor Belfort, Zachary Souza. Both guys say that, you know, this is an important fight. They both want the title fight next. I think Yoel Romero's got to be sitting there waiting for the winner of the UFC 199 fight between Rockhold and Weidman.
But
these guys are right there.
Yeah.
These guys are right there.
And Bisping, too, has been making, like, a strong case.
And you know what? And I'm not going to lie. Putting Bisping in there at some point wouldn't be bad either. Like, yeah. The guy, it's kind of, that'd be kind of one of those ones where he's definitely not the number one contender, but you're just like, thank you for everything you've done for us over your career.
Yeah.
Like, here's cookie. Your title shot. Like, when they gave Scorsese that Oscar that he did not deserve.
Here's your gold pen or whatever. Take that.
Like, Leo DiCaprio winning the Oscar. Yeah, Leo won the Oscar. Might as well just give Michael Bisping the title shot.
That's what I'm saying. So, I guess it is awesome. But, I don't know. Tell me what you think. Because Vitor Belfort, obviously in the United States, he's extremely polarizing. There's a lot of people that hate him. I know he's a superstar here, but I think I understand that it's not necessarily that everybody loves him either.
He's polarizing.
He's pretty polarizing here too. Jacare.
He comes across as a very preachy guy.
So what do you think is going to happen? Because this is, man, Vitor's 20 years into his career. I kind of feel like in some ways this is like Vitor's last stand. Like if he loses this fight, not to say that he's done fighting, but as a relevant contender, I think he'd be kind of done. So I don't know. What's your take as you look at this? Is this kind of Vitor's last shot? And do you think he has a chance to win the fight?
He always has a chance to win the fight. And that's why we're always going to want to watch Vitor. He's got finishing power, and that's like one of those to me, finishing power is like a defining thing that makes people want to keep watching.
Right.
You might have a great athlete. If it doesn't have finishing power, I mean, most people, we're going to be interested in watching it for all those reasons. But like the average Brazilian MMA fan hates George St. Pierre. Because we've seen like a bunch of fights going all the way. The average Brazilian MMA fan doesn't even know who fucking Demetrius Johnson is.
Right.
To me, he's the best pound-for-pound fighter.
Ah,
Joe Jones, Mike Bond.
Yep.
But more than the average Brazilian.
I like the fact that our new hires are really educated. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we're upping our game.
But so Vitor can always finish a fight, and so he's always going to be intriguing for that. And he's polarizing, yes, because he's got strong opinions that he doesn't mind voicing, so nothing wrong with that. Like, I find that interesting too. It's a part of his personality, makes him like stand out. But I just completely lost.
Perfect, awesome. That's part
okay,
of the real show.
Going back.
Frosty beverages all the way around.
Sorry guys, it's been a long couple of days. But you have that kind of like interesting aspect of always like being kind of like, you always wonder which Vitor you're going to get.
And I got to think that if Jacare could win this fight, it would be like a mass. Like, you said he's getting popular. I do remember one of the coolest moments I've ever seen was in Jaraguá de Sul.
Yeah.
When he beat Chris Camozzi in their first fight. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the entire arena was doing, like, the alligator.
Everybody loves him.
It was cool.
He's unanimous.
And if he could beat Vitor Belfort, I mean, I got to think that would be something that would kind of launch him into, like, superstardom, right?
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's already on the verge. He's a nice, people like him. He's funny. He's personable. Like, people can relate to him. The thing is, though, we are kind of like all wondering what's going to happen with the UL situation because we're waiting to hear on that. Because as it stands, and that's why this matchup is so interesting, you have Jacare as a favorite and a favorite to like have like his title fight finally, because he's been vocal about it.
Right.
Make no mistake, like every time he always says, whoever wins this gets it. Like, there's no way they're denying me this. Like, he says it in those words, there's no way they're denying me this shot if I win this fight. So he's invested in that, but he's coming off a loss as it stands.
I thought he won the fight.
Yoel cheated in the fight, and then we found out that he cheated in the general sense. But it's probably going to be over, turned into a no contest, right?
I don't think so. I think it's part as the it's out of competition, so it's good. So it stands.
Stands. Sorry. Yeah. So he's coming off. Sorry, that was dumb. Yeah.
No, I hadn't heard that. So I think as soon as he comes off, which is what, like August or something like that that he gets off. So I would assume he's like the number one contender again.
So now that's the thing. So he's coming off a loss and Vitor is not. So you have that like to wrap your head around. Having said that, I do feel like Jacare is the favorite. And
I do too.
But it's a very intriguing one.
But Vitor can knock out anybody in the first round. Yeah. All right, Fabricio Werdum, main event. You said it earlier. He's been putting in the work. I do actually, though, get the sense that he is really becoming a star down here. And I guess the heavyweight champ of the world is always a star or whatever, like no matter what country they're from. Or, I mean, the heavyweight champ is the heavyweight champ. What's that?
He did tough, too.
He did tough as well. I guess, is he a star now? Because before, I never felt that before.
He's a star. I don't understand why he's not a bigger star, to be honest. People have asked me. I do not get it. He's the full package. He's in the most popular division. He's a champ. He was on Tough. He submitted Big Nog, who's also a huge name, as you guys know. He's funny. He does everything. He's charismatic, and it's also very organic. It's not something that he forces upon people. So I don't really understand why everybody doesn't
know who
he is.
Maybe it's that stupid face he does.
I liked it like the first 100 times, but like now it's getting very old. It's not his fault though. Every time someone interviews him, every freaking time, always with the ringing face.
People had the fans here. Yeah, the fans here had the cutout mask, and he even has
it
a
was
hashtag.
All over the
hashtag
place.
Happy
people, face.
He's
happy
gonna
face.
Have a lot of people wearing the mask during the wins or something. You haven't heard about that?
I saw 40,000
Verdooms that he wants to do.
That'd be amazing if he pulls it off.
That would be cool, but like, why don't we just kill the happy face then?
I'm down.
Like, it goes out with
like,
the bang.
Oh, it was amazing, and it died in Curitiba. Yeah, right. We never use it again.
That would just go full circle. But yeah, but he's a star, undeniably. Most people know who he is, but for some reason, he's not an Anderson.
What do you think about this fight? Because I'll tell you what, I came down here, I got on the plane thinking this is Fabricio's fight all day. Submission skills, he's kind of shored up the cardio issues. His striking has definitely gotten better. You know, the whole Kings MMA thing. But Cold Coffee got me thinking Ohio's own Stipe Miocic over there, who looks lean this week,
looks focused this week.
Looks
very focused.
It kind of scares me a little bit. I think this is a closer fight than I originally thought when I got on a plane to come down.
I'm going
to
turn that on you. Like, why? But how do you see? And this is something that I caught myself, like, struggling with. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm going to ask you. How would you see Jokic winning that one, though?
Knockout.
Like, that's like.
Knockout.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean.
You see that happening?
I could see him finishing him.
Yeah. That's
I mean, I think if anything, because I see Stipe, if he knocks him down, he's going to try to go in there. I would be surprised if he initially jumped in to try to do some ground and pound. I think
because,
he's going to want to stay
people
away
have
from
made
that.
Made that mistake in the past, Fedor. But like,
and I think if he keeps it on the feet, he's got a great chance. And he's tough as nails. I mean, I think he's got.
He is.
I think he's got good cardio. And I think if it went the distance, it'll be tough for him because you got to win the judges over. It's in Brazil. But I think if he makes a good showing,
it doesn't make a difference. I don't get when people
say that. It does. It does, though.
I mean, we're not.
No, but I'm gonna.
The judges are not Brazilian, though.
But I'm gonna tell you why I think it does make a difference. I do think it makes a subconscious difference in the fact that, and I don't mean this just in Brazil. I mean it anywhere. When the home crowd is into it, like a guy could throw three punches that largely miss, but the crowd goes nuts. And I do think the judges like subconsciously register that as like more than
absolutely.
I've
seen Lyoto lose to Phil Davis.
That's a hell of an example. No, that's a hell of an example. But
that was a surprising one. I mean, that to me was like, oh, you guys are really not like biased at all. At all.
Well, here's the thing. So Stipe, this is weird because I did. You know, you kind of start going through those performances in your head and you're like, okay, well, Stipe, his last fight out, he knocked out Andrei Arlovski. Okay. I mean, Andre's a great fighter.
Oh, yeah.
But
I cannot get Andre. I'm just kidding. Wow. I'm sorry, Andre, if you're listening. Sorry. I'm a huge fan.
Are you hating on Andre?
I love Andre. Oh, my God. I can't believe I said that.
Okay, either. Frosty beverages. She's cut off. Then you think about the Mark Hunt fight where he literally just pieced up Mark Hunt for like five rounds. I mean, just literally just beat the shit out of him for five rounds.
But he lost to JDS.
He beat Fabio Maldonado, dude. No, I mean,
oh yeah,
nobody knocks out Fabio now. Nobody Glover, finishes in the first
Glover
round.
Bulldozer the guy, and Glover's a fucking light heavyweight. But anyway, so no, it's actually I just wanted to like make sure people knew that my pick was Andre for the fight.
Even though you hate on him,
I do not hate on Andre. I'm an Andre fan, but yeah, that does. And then you saw Miocic lose to JDS. It's kind of like, I like Miocic. I think it made sense that he's the guy doing this fight. I think he's a very like solid fighter who you're never gonna like count him out. But I don't see him as having that edge that I think that Verdum has. So that to me is kind of like, that's why I ask you. I'm not saying, oh my God, he can't win, it's impossible or whatever. It's just, to me, I kind of like failed to see how. And I don't know, I might just get a very unpleasant surprise.
You taught me back into not second guessing myself anymore. All right.
Well, I mean, when you put it like that, he definitely, you know, I think Verdum on paper definitely is the more well-rounded, has maybe more weapons.
Yeah.
I think if, you know, it's going to come down to who can control the game plan, who, and they always say that, you know, are they going to stick to my plan, fight my fight, don't let him fight his fight. I think if Stipe has his way, he keeps the fight on his feet, and I think he can damage Fabricio. I think Fabricio has all this pressure. Yeah, he's been trying to move up. I think he could possibly be distracted. And I think that's the kind of thing. He might not go in this fight 100% mentally. And I think that's the kind of thing you go into a guy on like Stipe Miocic that he comes in fully focused and with dangerous weapons. Yeah. He can hurt him and he can take that belt away.
He can.
The Brazilian's picking the Brazilian. The Ohio guy's picking the Ohio guy.
Imagine that.
Don't get me started. I'm already being accused by my staff
riveting,
of like Homer
riveting
picks.
Analysis.
I picked him as soon as he walked in with the Cleveland hat.
First official picks and you went 5-0
for Brazilians. Not because of Verdum, but I did get some heat.
It was all right. Last thing I want to ask for you real quick before our ratings go down as we get the young Mike Bond on.
But it's
I
a sharp
like
looking.
My case here. I
it's
don't
the sharp
leave.
Looking
I'm
Mike Bond.
So much fun. Mike Bond looks amazing today. I just want to like stress
ooh,
that.
Yeah. Hey.
I said he looked good. She said amazing.
Inner office romance. Vanderlei Silva. I know that you've been in touch. I'm just curious what's going on. We were actually trying to get a hold of him. We wanted to do an interview with him because it's been a long time since Vanderlei has really been easily accessible. I mean, I know he's been making statements and stuff like that, but we were hoping to try to get a hold of him. And you were working on getting an interview. Then he ends up being in some type of accident where he was.
Yeah, you remind me. I'm going to text him back.
I just want to know what you've heard so far because it seems like the details have been kind of scarce. And, I mean, I hate to bring up, you know, bad things, but and it doesn't sound as serious as this. But, obviously, I mean, we've just seen, you know, a mixed martial artist pass that was hit as a pedestrian you know, in a car accident, and it just—I just wonder. I mean, is Vanderlei okay? I mean, is this something that like we need to worry about? Is this not a big deal? Have you been able to ascertain exactly what the hell's going on?
Well, I only talked to his wife. I talked to her twice a day too. Super nice woman, by the way. She's great. That sounded sarcastic, but it wasn't. She's really great. Yeah. I like her.
It didn't sound sarcastic.
Okay. I get that sometimes. It sounds sarcastic by accident. Anyway, I talked to her twice, and what she said, it was just kind of like, he's okay. He's good.
Okay.
He hurt his shoulder, and they were going to he was undergoing tests the first time. They were going to get the results, go see the doctor, and see if he needed surgery. But
so that's why I didn't get, like, because there was, like, reports that surgery was done. There was, like, no surgery.
Yeah.
And then, like, what the hell kind of test do you need? I guess, like, an MRI or something?
MRI, probably, like, scans and stuff. And then I texted him, and I asked him to just kind of, like, if he could just give me a little bit of an update on how he's doing, just for defense and stuff. And he just answered, okay. So he can die.
All right, there you go. You heard it. Straight from Vanderlei Silva. The report is okay.
But I'm gonna reach out to him again just to see if we can get like a fuller update and the details, because she told me to like to talk about him about the details because she didn't really know much. But yeah, apparently
is she still back in Vegas or is she down here also?
They're here.
Taya is as well.
I called a Brazilian number, so I would assume. I like that we can just like almost journalism here. I don't know. I call the Brazilian over.
It rang.
That's not like the podcast. Just keep it in cash.
That's how we do.
But yeah, he's here now, and I guess he's here now. But yeah, so that's what I have so far. I don't know if anything else came out. I'm just gonna like touch base with him again and see if I can get like a fuller thing, and then you can just follow me on Twitter and find out.
That's right.
Ha.
That's
I
what's
just
up.
Blinked out of one eye, just kind of like. That was a smart move.
She has been known how her Twitter follow has been blowing up since the recent addition.
Crazy. Oh my god. Whenever like anybody from the team RTs me or something or just mentions me.
Is that a retweet, an RT?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. I'm new to this Twitter
thing.
Oh,
okay. You know, I'm just gonna give you the rundown of the social media thing.
Maybe that's why I only have like 500
followers. I'm like the Kardashian of the staff.
How many selfies have you taken
my
today?
My one size that I say that.
How many selfies
I'm
did
gonna
you take?
I'm going to make that happen.
You took our first official junkie selfie today.
I'm making changes, guys. You're
going
to have to keep up with
big
me.
Things.
Big things happen. All right. Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Fernanda. Always is a pleasure to catch up with you. You know
no,
that.
I refuse. Let's just keep going
okay.
forever.
All right.
It's been fun.
F Mike Bond.
No, thank you, guys. I always have, like, it. I get, like, increasingly comfortable talking to you guys, so...
Your English just keeps getting better every time.
I've been working really hard on my Portuguese, so we'll do your podcast really soon.
Okay, looking forward to that. Yeah, you speak Spanish though, and you understand Portuguese like quite a bit. He's just like trying to like
tell me
about
my secrets. All right, well, cool. Well, we've got to get the young Mike Bond over there. He's just itching. If there's anything he likes more than a camera, it's a microphone. So we got to get him on here real quick and re-up on some frosty.
Yeah, I was gonna say we might have to re-up. We have an unnamed UFC official.
UFC official is coming here and started downing frosty beverages over there. Jeez, that's all right. Fortunately, this unnamed UFC official is more than welcome to have as many as he likes. So
yep.
We will re-up on some frosty beverages, and when we come back, the young Mike Bond. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Fernanda Praches has moved on, and we have brought the young Mike Bond in. Mike, I was a little hesitant to put you on, man. I feel like you're trying to take my job, bro. You're flying all over the world. I'm gonna have to go home and tell my family pretty soon that I got canned. They brought in the younger, better dressed version of me that probably doesn't drink as many frosty beverages.
It just makes sense. I heard last week when he was like, when you said, "Oh, Cole Coffee's not here," he's like, "What? I'm not good enough?" I thought he was coming after me. So maybe it's
after
one of us.
Me. You know? I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for John and Cold Coffee. You helped us out a lot today, shooting videos and everything. You guys, we're a team. That's what makes us do so well. And we're fortunately in a privileged enough position now as a company and as a website that we're able to send more than one person on the road. It used to be, you know, you by yourself going to every single event. And fortunately now, a few of us are able to go as well. And I think that makes the coverage even better. I wouldn't want to be here alone.
No doubt.
It makes it way better.
Well, let me ask you. I know you're a younger man than me, a much more fit man than me, and still new as far as the world trekking goes. You know, you're building your repertoire really, really soon. But let's just... You know, nobody's listening here. Are you a little tired? I'm a little tired, dude. I'm not going to lie, man. The Rotterdam to Curitiba trip sounded pretty awesome in theory. I'm a little tired.
I'm actually okay right now. I'm not feeling too bad. I thought it was going to be worse. I don't feel, you know, you could always feel better, but I thought that day at home, you know, in between, I was going to be absolutely dead. But I went home, you know, got a nice night's sleep, got up, did everything I needed to do that day before leaving to the airport, and I got on the flight. I was like, damn, I actually don't feel too horrible. But you know, after a 12-hour trip down to Brazil, of course you feel a little of the jet lag and all that stuff. But yeah, I thought I'd be a lot worse. I think a lot had to do with it, the fact that we had a few late nights working and all that stuff over in Rotterdam. I feel like I didn't really change too much the European time, so I think maybe that was what's contributing to it.
Well, you're known as a stat man around the MMA Junkie team, and as we were waiting to get back on air, you were dropping some stats over in Mrs. Praches's direction, talking about the Brazilian records. Now, this has always been a very kind of followed stat, I guess, from the very beginning of coming back down here. We said this is event number 24. Brazilians against non-Brazilians. Where does the record stand?
132 wins for Brazil, 74 for the foreigners.
Okay, so the foreigners are coming up a little bit because I remember when this people started tracking this stat to begin
with. Oh, it used to be insanely lopsided. Right. It was like 90%. It was only just a handful of winners on there. But now you have guys who have come down, like Nick Lentz, I think, has beat like three Brazilians in Brazil. There's a few of them. There's a few of them. Who?
Cummins has been
Cummins. Cummins needs to buy a damn house down here, dude. They just keep sending that guy down here every time, and he loves it. You talk to him, like, he doesn't mind. He enjoys traveling the world and stuff, but yeah, that guy should probably buy some property down
here. Well, and it does matter in this main event here because Stipe has been down here before. Now he fought Fabio Maldonado, but I mean, Fabio Maldonado, here's the thing about it. Fabio is definitely kind of a folk hero. You know, fans love him. He's going to be you're going to get a bloodbath when Fabio fights.
Yeah.
But it was also a guy moving up to heavyweight that had no business fighting in the UFC's heavyweight division.
A complete mistake. Who was supposed to be fighting Stipe and not fight? Do you remember originally?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Good look. I've had too many frosty beverages. That's your job. You're stat guy.
I know. I should remember.
I'm supposed to go and do interviews.
I was just trying to put you on. Okay. Fernandez says it was Junior Dos Santos. So, yeah. I mean.
That's a slight downgrade in opponent.
Yeah, right? So. Yeah, Fabio, one of the guys that I remember way, way back in the day, I think UFC 102 that I went to, just as a fan. And I remember, this is like one of my favorite stories too, I remember going down with my buddy who were there. My mom drove us down to Vancouver to Portland where that event was taking place. It was headlined by Big Nog fighting Randy Couture. And I remember we just were wandering around the hotel. We just so happened when we went down there to be in the fighters' hotel. And we go down to, you know, the lower, you know, floors of the hotel where I guess all the ballrooms are, where they had the mats, the fighters training. We kind of peeked through one of the doors and I saw Anderson Silva training with JDS, like doing, you know, it wasn't full on sparring, but I'll just never forget the sight of Anderson Silva throwing a head kick at JDS and him catching it and completely sweeping out his back leg underneath it, and Anderson just falling onto his back. And it was a trip. And you know, to relay it back to Fabio, we were standing outside and I think there was maybe one of the managers or someone at the time, and they're pointing out Fabio. They said, this guy's going to be in the UFC soon, just watch out. And I'd never heard of him, you know, I'm just a fan at the time.
Right.
It probably wasn't following too much of like the local Brazil scene or anything like that, but I remember when he first got signed, I think it was like a short notice fight, like some card overseas or something. I was like, that's the guy that they pointed out, they said would be in there. And it was just really funny how it tied back. And of course, you know, years later, he's no longer with the UFC. He's fighting Fedor Emelianenko and Rizin. Madness. But that's a guy, Fabio. I mean, he'll go in there and he'll stand and he'll go to war with anyone.
He's
so you can't hate on him too much for that one.
Well, Stipe, I mean, he's definitely experienced this before. I mean, this is a completely different type of fight for him and a completely different type of environment, the stadium show. I will be really interested. This is one I've been fortunate enough to be at every one of the UFC stadium shows so far. So Toronto, Melbourne, Stockholm, now here. I've been at them all.
Yeah, I've done them all except for Melbourne.
So the thing that's interesting is, like, Rogers Center, the first one, the visual was overwhelming. I mean, just you walk in, it was like, oh, my God, this place is so massive. But I'll never forget, the volume, not that great. Not that big. It's not the same. You know, the Bell Center in Montreal where there's 20,000 seats, but they're, like, straight up and down, and they're, like, right on top of the action. That's insane. So I think a lot of people are really looking forward to like 40, 45,000 screaming Brazilian fans. And I'm pretty excited about that too. But I'm anxious to see, does it translate? Like, does this become a real hostile environment for Stipe Miocic? Or is it one of those things where the building's just so big, it doesn't translate
it's,
the same way?
It's weird. I mean, like I said, I wasn't in Melbourne, so I can't speak too much of that other than seeing photos and all that, but it seemed like there was an overwhelming amount of floor seats in Melbourne, and maybe that kind of...
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that kind of did something to it, so I'm curious to see the layout for this event on Saturday. But the Rogers Center, you know, it's a baseball stadium. It's very much built for that capacity of people. Of course, a lot of floor seats, but I felt the structure in there was a lot better for that type of show. Stockholm was pretty good too. It was weird because it was like 4 a.m. when Gustafsson came out to have that main event against Anthony Johnson. So it was a little weird. The crowd, of course, was a little fatigued, but they were still, you know, loud as ever when he was walking out, quiet as ever after he got knocked out. But yeah, I'm very curious to see what the show's going to be like, if we're going to be able to audibly over, especially over the broadcast. That's the thing too, you know, sometimes when the UFC does these shows, you don't even know. It's like anything that special, right? Like, you're doing this crazy event in Brazil, 45,000 people, like, let's do some crowd pans. Let's do something that makes you realize this isn't just your average UFC event at X Arena in X City. So I feel like, you know, I'm not here to give UFC tips on their broadcast.
Nah, bro,
but I feel like
that's production advice, dude. It's true. It's
yes,
the truth,
so
man.
I do hope that they, you know, try to make it feel as special as possible because it is a very, very special event. And we'll, I guess, you know, time will only tell how it translates on TV and all that stuff, especially in person as well.
I've even said, even on just a week-to-week basis, man, I wish they would show more, like, scenic shots. I mean, truthfully, like, on a week-to-week basis, you don't even know where the hell the octagon is for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, I wish they would show more scenics throughout the broadcast and kind of establish it. So, you've been down to Brazil, Cocof. You've been down here for a couple times. This is nothing new to you, but, I mean, are you what's your take on this thing? I know we've been in the building twice already. We haven't gotten to see the setup yet.
Haven't seen the setup.
That's
haven't
the thing.
Seen the field. I've only seen like side rooms.
They've been keeping us in little hallways, yes. Man. They've been doing that on purpose. They haven't been letting us out there. Are you feeling like this is going to be something special, or are you just like, it's an event?
I'm excited, but you're right. I remember you know, being in some of the bigger places where the sound, when it's spread out so much, you never get that full feeling like when watching like Connor fight at like the O2 and now the O3 or whatever it's called now. It's the O4 and the next time we'll go there. Or is it the 3 arena
It's the
now?
3.
The
yeah,
three
it went from the O2
to the
3.
But I remember being in there for the O2 and just that particular layout, it was just so incredible. It was so loud. It was just mind-blowing. It was so loud. And then you go to some of the places where the sound spread out and you don't feel that and you kind of miss it. But for me, I want to see just the visual, you know, seeing all the different places. I want to be able to look across what would be a field and see all the people wrapped around. And I think for the historical point of being there for that, I'm very, very excited for that. And I'm very excited to just hear the crowd and feel the crowd welcoming all these former champs and future champs, you know, coming into that room. So, yeah, I'm super stoked. I'm super stoked to be in there. And I hope the people are I know they're going to be excited. I know they're going to be loud. There's something about this town. Just, it's very polite. It doesn't feel like your typical Brazilian town. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we go to a lot of these places and it's like, oh, is this going to be sort of shady or seedy? Do I need to be looking over my shoulder every time I walk outside or whatever? And I don't feel that here. So I hope the crowd's as rowdy and rambunctious as they get in all the other places where maybe it's a little more gritty and down to earth, you know, that you get to some of these Brazil towns. But I'm sure it's going to be because the Brazil fans never let us down.
We'll get
when
to
we
see
go to a
weigh-ins tomorrow. I think that'll be the first.
Yeah,
I think
that should be 20,000 people at the weigh-ins tomorrow.
That's going
to
be.
I saw that
nuts.
In a press release. That's kind of a bold claim to
that
make.
Would be, well, they gave away tickets
right.
for this fight. Or there is, there
always,
is
they
ticket.
Always, yeah, they always give away tickets. Down
like
here, the weigh-ins are always tickets. Free.
Okay.
It's ticketed. It's free with tickets. They know exactly.
They must
what
have a rough number then if they are giving away tickets for that. So
I'll be amazed, dude. If there's 20,000 people at weigh-ins,
that's gonna be nuts.
I'm gonna be in a frenzy, just like
awesome.
I'm not even gonna
like
sleep
school,
tomorrow night, dude. Yeah,
little
I'm
school
like,
kid
little,
just losing it.
I'm gonna let you were gonna say schoolgirl.
I was, but I looked over
because you got this damn feminist over here that's gonna start talking shit to me.
I love how you caught that.
I knew it, dude.
I double checked my shit. All
right, well, we
learning.
We talked.
See, Fernanda, I'm learning. I learn.
Mike, we talked a lot about UFC 198, but I did want to ask you just kind of what you're looking forward to. I think you've been throwing out John Lineker and Rob Font as the fight. Is that the one that you most got your eyes on?
Yeah, that's a good fight. I like that one. Lineker, you can't really go wrong with that guy. You throw him in there, and he's gonna throw his hands of stone, I think is his nickname. So, and Font's an interesting guy, too. His UFC career is being slowed a little bit by injuries, but when he's in there, man, that guy is – seems as dangerous as any bantamweight out there. So very curious, you know, he is a bigger bantamweight. I believe he's fought at 145 as well too, and that's interesting with Lineker, of course, coming up from 125, which he was never really part of that division. But still, you know, he's definitely like very small, you know, what is he, 5'4", 5'5", something like that. The size difference in that is going to be interesting, so I'm curious to see how Lineker deals with that.
The first time I ever met John Lineker, I believe, was his fight in Macau. And he was in the food court eating a pizza on, like, Wednesday. I was like,
right?
You know,
no.
He didn't have, like,
he
a
has no,
nutritionist.
Yeah.
And I will say this. In that food court in Macau, there's not much else I'd eat in there besides pizza eating.
Sure.
It's some weird shit in there.
Sure.
It's some weird shit. All right. Well, let's talk about some UFC news real quick. The big thing, well, other than Conor, but I'm not going to talk about Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Dude, you guys can go somewhere else and get
Stop
that.
Stop it.
Stop, exactly. Stop it. Go somewhere else with that. The reports this week of the UFC sale, I think by now we all understand what happened was there were definitely advanced negotiations for a purchase of some type, not the entire company being sold away, but more akin to something of 2012 when Abu Dhabi purchased a share. And it makes a hell of a lot of sense when you think about it, when you hear that the leading candidates are these Asian-based firms. I've been fortunate enough to go over to Japan, South Korea, Macau, all these markets and see the possibilities. I mean, you start hearing the staggering numbers of population bases that live over there, like what type of economic – I mean, you ever watch these like real sports stories where like Stephen Marbury's shoes and like I mean, they're just – if you can crack these markets, it's billions and billions and billions of dollars. And the UFC's had trouble getting into those markets. You know, they've had trouble getting it done. And to me – this seems like a brilliant way to make some inroads in those markets is to bring some of those people in, you know, give them some financial shine on anything they get done. It sounds like a brilliant play to me. But what's been your whole take on all this UFC sale talk? Because it's been interesting to see how some people are like, yeah, I told you they're selling. Fertitta's are getting a football team. They're out. Yeah. Dana's done. It's like wait. They're building a brand new corporate campus. They're hiring staff all the time. They're expanding into new countries. Like, if you're trying to sell your entire company, like, you're trying to trim every damn expense you can. So,
sure.
I don't know. It's just been an interesting story for me to follow.
Yeah, it is very interesting because that was my reaction too. I was like, really, like, if the UFC, if Dana and the Fertittas walk away from this thing 100% one day, that doesn't surprise me. Dana's even said as much. You know, when I lose the passion for this, I'm out and I'll feel fine about it. But I don't feel like right now is that time. It's just there's so much going on.
You can text him about a fight at like 2 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. He'll text you like right back to talk about a fight. Now, exactly. if you're asking him to confirm some breaking news, you ain't gonna hear shit.
Sure.
But if you just want to talk to him about a fight, he will talk to you about fights.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what really took me back. And it just seems like the stage, you know, you saw things just come in. The Reebok deal is still only in the first year. There's just a lot of moving parts. I feel like if they're not ready to walk away from this thing, there's still a lot of work to be done. I know they've made some huge steps forward. New York is done. They do have the USADA thing, like drug testing. There's a lot of positives that they've done that if they did want to walk away, like it's not a terrible time to do it. But I just feel like this – I don't know. I feel like they're not done with this thing yet. So that's what made me right away be like, I'm not too convinced. But damn, dude, like that tag that got thrown out there by Darren Rovell in that story, $4 billion – it's a hell of a return on investment from the $2 million they paid in 2001. Well, so that part, like whether you feel you're ready to walk away from it or not, if you're looking at that money, be like, we paid how much for this thing in 2001? Like, okay, I could see you being like, fuck all the other stuff. Let's go.
No, you're right. I think that's a great point. And I have that's kind of always been when people ask me about it, is the way I feel about it is that like, listen, if somebody comes with some ridiculous amount of money, I mean, I think it was an unnamed USC official we were talking with the other day over here that said every business is for sale, and that's the damn truth. I mean, for the right price, everything's for sale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know,
she
looked
over at me. She looked at me.
Even the feminist agrees that for the right price, you can get anything you want. Wow, it's already that time of the night. I don't even know where you go from there. But yes, anything is for sale. And I do feel like if anybody ever came, I mean, for instance, you know, $4 billion, $5 billion, whatever it is. I mean, would the Fertittas like to own an NFL team? Hell yeah. But
sure.
I honestly do feel like they are still like fight. I think they all like love what they do. They love their job and they're fight fans at the end of the day. And they're not actively looking to walk away. But I don't know. Cole Coffey, you were there all the time. I mean, it's funny because you've been talking about this on the podcast damn near since our inception, you know, a little over a year ago. That I mean, it seems like there's always these rumors, but I mean, I do always go back. I do feel like at the end of the day, those guys really are fight fans.
They are, and you're right. You know, and you've kind of changed my point of view, you know, over the time of this podcast because, you know, I'm one of the ones that was dead set even when this first started at that time that I thought there were already plays in motion to sell the company. I thought some of the moves that they made internally seemed to be moves that weren't being made by a company that was doing well. Like there were things going on that just didn't seem right with me. So I was under the impression and still kind of thinking that, hey, you know, they're looking for people. I was hearing stories that there were small investors were being brought in, you know, off to the side, you know, club owners. Like I heard when the Hakkasan group bought out like the Light group, you know, that the dude from the Light group took his millions and was approached by the UFC if he wanted to become an investor. Is that true? Who fucking knows? It's all Vegas rumors or whatnot. But I started hearing that sort of thing. So when you're looking at a company, you're like, well, why are they bringing in other investors? So maybe you're right. I think it could be a matter of, you know, when they did with the Flash Entertainment or whatnot and put a huge portion. Even when you're seeing things happen with the way that the Station Casinos, which is owned by the Fertittas, that's all starting to change as well. They bought the Palms. I've heard that they're going to go public, that they're going to start offering stocks and whatnot, and that the Fertittas portion of it was going to get bought out, which frees up a lot of capital and also frees up the obligations that they would have to that, that maybe if it did mean that they wanted to partake to buy a portion of an NFL team, they're freed up to do that kind of thing.
Right.
Because no NFL organization and no team is going to allow a primary owner or something like that have a stake in a gambling organization.
Yeah, I heard that as well.
I think this frees up a lot of that. So I think there's still things in motion that we can't we can't say that shit's not happening. I think it's just, but it makes more sense that now that this Fertitta Entertainment that was controlling part of the station, that role is going to change a little bit. I think it's going to free the Fertittas up to take on other little things. But I also believe that it can also open up a door for somebody to come in and say, hey, well, let us put a huge amount of money. You'll still have a share or a portion of this, but maybe even let them run it. Maybe they won't be the primary owners, but they'll say, we still appreciate what you're doing. Run this thing. You know, which like the Station Casinos, for the most part, like the Fertittas things were running it, but they weren't the full-on owners of it.
Yeah, it's just odd because
rich people are smart.
Dude, I'm telling you, these guys, billionaires don't get bigger billionaires and stay billionaires unless they're doing the moves that these guys are doing. But, I mean, who knows? But you're right. At a price, everything is for sale, and maybe it's not the fact that we know. Really adamant about, I think they're trying to sell it outright because I was thinking that there were other plays, including the NFL thing and other things that were going on, even just the way that they sort of run the business, you know, where a lot of businesses dealt with lines of credit as opposed to actual real money amounts that they're doing, and they're taking little monies or whatever. And you want to sell something high. You want to sell it while it's worth it. And it's not – right now it is as high it has ever been. So right now this is a prized thing.
I agree.
And when you're looking at these companies that have – the amount of money that these companies that they were talking about, the amount of capital that they have to throw around is just mind-blowing. Insane. So for some of these companies, a $3.5 billion, maybe $4, $5 billion valuation to them, they're like, we can make that back up in whatever. Like the one guy from the – I forget what the China group or one of the ones.
With the self-worth of like
30-some billion dollars. Unreal. And with numbers, how the UFC's been posting, like they said, it was maybe $600 million in profit or revenues last year. That is such an impressive number.
Yep.
So, I mean, I can only imagine what somebody could say, well, I want a little portion of that. And for them to be able to get an influx of money to be able to operate and keep doing what they're doing, but with the freedom of not having to open up a line of credit somewhere, you know, and do all these other kind of things, I could see where they really want to do that. And if that frees up, I think with what they're doing with the station, there's a lot of, like you said, there's so much smart business shit. And I guess I pay more attention now that I've been trying to do more business myself. That it's just amazing the people that when you have that amount of money, that the decisions that you can make, and then you start looking other areas to bring more money in, which frees you up to do other stuff while still sort of controlling or whatnot. I mean, it's kind of exciting to see what happens, but it's also fearful too, because you know, a UFC without a Dana White or a mixed martial arts world without a UFC would be very, very frightening.
And that's you know? My thing too. Like, I feel like it's still their baby, and I don't think they're ready to let their baby go at this point. I don't think they'd be comfortable with it. I think they'd be, you know, standing on the outside looking in. Like we said off the top, I wouldn't be surprised if they sell, you know, 10%, 15%, 20% between them to let, you know, a Chinese group, whatever, come in and get some of the profits, as Ken was saying here. That makes all the sense in the world. Why not? But I don't think the Fertittas are going to be giving up majority ownership of it anytime soon.
Dude, I mean, think about this. You got Dana White doing that, looking for a fight program. This man is on the road. He don't have to be on. He's going to like crazy towns to film a show that's on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Come on, but. I will say this though, maybe the MMA Roadshow should purchase the Rosetta Stone for Mandarin Chinese or something. Maybe we should just start getting our Chinese in place.
We're long overdue. We should have bought it for some Portuguese a long time ago.
I have the whole Rosetta Stone for Portuguese. Do you? I paid like $400. I have the entire program.
Well, it's paid off. It really
Maizuna.
Has.
Maizuna. Maizuna. Banheiro.
That all sounds like Prachis. Spanish. Prachis.
I got it all. I got it all. I'm there. Mike Bond, Ultimate Fighter featuring flyweights. I didn't want to get this. It was weird. It was like they were going to do this tryout, then they're not doing a tryout because they already know who they're going to use. But a lot of people were like, yeah, that's a stupid concept anyway, that you're going to do tough and then you're going to like make them face the champ. Like, that's ridiculous. But I don't know. Give me your thoughts because, A, it's kind of interesting that they stuck with flyweights and that they are still giving the winner a shot at Demetrius Johnson. Because I mean,
so weird.
Dude, it's just weird after watching.
And you're going to have two coaches that got knocked out by Demetrius in the first round.
But that just goes to show you why they need to do tough, you know?
No,
it
exactly.
Sounds like they did awesome. Everybody that they're bringing in is a champ of a regional organization, so that's pretty cool. And, Demetrius just laid waste to an Olympic medalist. How the hell else are you going to find somebody? But exactly. I wanted you to kind of couple it in with you know, the fact that we have this video that we're going to be putting up at some point. But, you know, you talked to a lot of people today about their idea. Would they go on tough if they knew a title shot was involved? So just give me your take on the whole situation because it's a weird one.
It is.
But I'm not going to say I don't like it. Everybody's saying tough sucks and tough this. And I mean, you watch it.
Hey, man, I was
you watch
say.
It excitedly every single week to write your recap. And I know that all you can think about is I cannot wait to watch the latest episode.
I just refresh my inbox
every
day.
Get my recap done. Please
send
me that press screener so that I can watch it. I know it. I mean, sometimes you call me like, John, is your press screener in yet, dude? Is your press screener in? Because I don't have my press screener.
I mean, not to be sit here and look like a complete hater. There's some moments of tough that like I do enjoy watching that I think are relevant to, you know, the future. And sometimes you see these guys that do come through. There's the occasional, you know, Michael Chiesa, Tony Ferguson. Yeah. We've had less and less of them as time goes on. But, you know, those guys are 11 fights deep into their UFC career. So we don't know what these guys from the most recent seasons will be in 2-3 years from now. But, yeah, tough. I mean, it's kind of run its course. They're trying all these different things, you know, for the inaugural strawweight championship, you know, mixing upper weight class men with lower weight class women, just all these different little experiments. You know, Demetrius Johnson has no one to fight right now. So I guess this is fine. You're going to get some fresh blood in there. The thing that's weird about the Ultimate Fighters, though, is so rarely does the best fighter in the house actually win the tournament. Mm-hmm. Between injuries, having to fight.
That's just tournament MMA, right?
Exactly. Well, especially like this, where there's not much breaks. You're fighting, you know, three times in however many weeks they film the show. It's a very complicated thing. So that's my concern, is they're looking to find the next challenger for Demetrius, and I'm worried that it's not even going to be the best guy in the house. But you know, worst case scenario, maybe that guy fights him down the line or something. You're going to bring some fresh blood in, some new names, all that stuff. But like I said, the thing with Cejudo and Benavidez coaching is kind of weird. I'm looking forward to seeing that fight at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a really good fight, and those guys
don't like each other.
Like, genuinely, I feel like they've talked a lot about each other. I think
Benavidez thinks that Cejudo was ducking him, basically, on his way to the title.
And that'll probably – I'm guessing that'll happen in the next Mexico show. That would make all the next
yes,
all
it
the
would.
Sense
Absolutely.
In the world. All the sense in the world. So, but either way –
Yeah, that's in November.
You got to do what you got to do. There's Demetrius has beaten all these guys sometimes twice at this point, and he doesn't want to go up to 135 to even fight like a contender, like a, you know what Anderson did when he went up and fought. Not even – it's not like James Irvin or any of those dudes were contenders, but even just take like a fight against – a top 15 to 20 guy. He really, really wants to break that Anderson Silva title defense record. He's at 8. The record is 10. So he's like almost there. Maybe if he passes it, we'll see what's up then if he wants to move up. But if he's a guy that says, I need to continue defending my title, he wants to be active. He's probably, I know for a fact he's pissed. He's going to have to sit to the sidelines for this thing to get done until probably December. He wants to be active. He's healthy. He just won a fight in a couple minutes. You know, came out with no injuries. He's probably not too happy about having to sit and wait for this thing, but
I mean, you could slip in another fight for him, right? He could fight in the summer.
You could. Why not, right?
I mean, all you're saying is that guy gets a title shot. You're not saying that guy gets a title shot against Demetrius Johnson.
No, that's more than fair. So maybe I'm speaking out of turn a little bit here. Maybe he does fight again before
I mean,
then.
I'm not saying this. I haven't heard anything.
No,
I'm just saying. You
know
what I mean? Like,
that makes all the sense. But who knows? I mean, maybe they're going to be promoting as, like, these two guys that lost to DJ, you know, train or helping train beat these guys to beat him. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic, but at this point, the Ultimate Fighter, like, we just saw, I think the overnight ratings came out for last night's episode. It was like 366,000 or something like that.
They're getting good DVR boosts.
Sure, they are. But their live isn't good. I'll give them credit for that, but it's just not what it once was. People are very kind of sick of it, and it's not going away, so you kind of got to accept that.
You just don't want to do the reviews anymore for it.
Honestly, it's not even that. And, I mean, this will be important. This will be – the next season will be relevant to, you know, MMA. The future has to do with the title shot, but it's just – it's the same format. You can change the fighters, the stakes, the coaches, all this stuff. It comes down to pretty much the same format, and I think people are a little sick of that.
You made one really good point there. You said that in the tournaments, people don't get enough breaks. I didn't plan enough breaks in here. I have to pee really bad. So, coffee, you're in charge.
What? I get the.
Well, what's funny?
Hey,
I don't know.
Guys.
Oh, Fernanda's been handing off. What was funny? I
hello
was
again.
I was hoping it would happen, but it was funny. The door popped open for a second there, and it was. Chris Cyborg popped her head in there.
I saw that.
I thought maybe we were going to get a crash guest.
That'd
you know,
be
which
awesome.
Kind of like when we had the Derek the Black Beast Lewis came in and on an interview.
John's
know,
BFF.
It is.
He loves Derek's
become,
Derek.
Well, he's become quite the BFF for us. He's become a huge favorite of ours every time that we get to interview Derek Lewis. So that's always a good time. But. Yeah, no, but you raised good points. I mean, this is what a fun week, and you know, a lot of good fights. I think you know there's so much stuff that it's exciting, and it's funny that all this other stuff we talk about the tough that there's still all these other things that go on because we live in such a bubble that you know we still have to cover the tough, so we still cover all these other things that are going on. You know, and you look at tough, and you know, I'm kind of I guess to jump back on the tough thing. I've been recently happening to watch more since we've been interviewing these syndicate guys,
right.
Which has kind of been fun. You know,
yeah.
I thought it was great that the UFC reached out and said, hey, you know, there's these guys in Vegas. You know, we want to try something new. We're going to let you have access or try to reach out to this thing. Here's a gym that's like, well, here's some guys that happen to be in a show. Talk to them, you know, get their thoughts on it, you know, and it's been really fun. And, you know, it's been a little side project going in there and trying to do it. And granted, there's some days when we go down, I'm like, man, I don't want to get up in the morning, John. He's like, oh, by the way, we got an interview at 10 in the morning tomorrow, you know, down at Syndicate. And, you know, and some mornings, you know, I might not have anything planned for the day, but it's nice to not have anything planned for the day.
Sure.
You know, then we'll go down and meet with these guys. And I think they've been great. And it's been interesting meeting these fighters and getting to understand them a little bit better. And I think that's what harkens back to what was wonderful about Tough in the first place was getting these insights on these fighters that you didn't normally see.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what's great about this whole DJ thing, about the possibility of that, is that, one, that these guys are all studs anyways. I think the level overall of Tough fighters coming on the show now has gotten so high. We take it for granted.
It's weird. I mean, it's very weird because you would think, you know, they're looking for the next big prospect, the next champion, all this stuff. But you would think, and I had this thought for a while, that between, you know, Bellator, World Series of Fighting, all these other organizations, like, if these guys aren't signed already to one of these UFC, Bellator, WSOF, like, who's really out there that's going to be on Tough? Can they find these guys that aren't being scooped up? We see Bellator, they're signing guys like Aaron Pico, who's 18, who, you know, hasn't had an amateur or pro fight. They're signing him well before his debut.
And not Josh Thompson.
You know, and they're just trying to scoop up all these prospects. So you're like, you know, if these guys are willing to go on Tough, willing to, you know, take the notoriously poor contracts that come along with Tough of getting into UFC, like, are they that great of prospects? But then you see a guy like Phil Hawes, who, to my surprise personally, got eliminated on the elimination fight to even get in the house, which was crazy to me because when I was in Albuquerque a few months ago at Jackson's, I saw him.
He signed with the World Series of Fighters.
I saw him sparring with John Jones.
Yeah.
Like, and he was going, they were going hard at each other, toe to toe. You know, he was pushing John a little bit. John was pushing back, but I was like, whoa, this guy is unreal. And I saw he was on Tough a few months later. I was like, this guy's winning for sure. He might win the whole thing.
And
he gets
eliminated
right away.
He definitely won the clear favorites.
So we were there for the trout set day. We were there for the trout set day, and literally, like, everybody in the room was like, oh, there's the winner. And then he gets beat on the elimination.
Yeah,
so.
It's crazy. But that just goes to show at the same time, too, that a super prospect like him from Jackson's, who has, you know, countless high-level UFC fighters around, he's still going on Tough. So that shows that even though it didn't go his way, there's guys that are still willing to go through that process, trying to get into the UFC that way. So it's really hard to say. You know, you'd think that these guys would go somewhere else, that they'd get picked up early, but some of them aren't.
And the sacrifice. I think it's great that they're rewarding, especially now it's kind of interesting that they're like, all right, hey, you have the possibility of going in and getting an actual
people
title shot.
People are going to be so mad we're doing which like is, a whole segment on Tough, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so. I mean, but it's just –
sure
it's,
was an amazing segment. It was probably the best segment ever.
It probably was. I mean, we could stop it. But no, you're right. Just jump back on the Phil Haas because I lost my I lost my train of thought because there's so much good stuff to talk about Tough that if we only did, you
just
know,
throw Fernando under the bus.
No. I would never throw her under the bus. I'd throw under, then I'd back it up over it, and then I'd run back over it. But yeah, I remember seeing Phil like when the first time I saw him was when we happened to be at the Black Zillions watching. Getting some interviews and watching him in training and just first seeing him and seeing him like such a physical specimen, I was like, who the heck is this? You know,
the beast.
And then they were like, oh, hey, he's trying out for Tough. And I was like, awesome. And it just made Tough again more relevant. The fact that the sacrifices that these guys have to make, you know, we were talking a little bit. We asked some fighters and this video will come out later on. We asked guys if there's a possibility, would they go back on or go on to the Tough and knowing that at the end of the tunnel was a title shot. And a lot of them were like, hell yes, hell yes, hell yes. And then here in Brown, he's like, eh, you know, because these guys go in there. It's a nice place, but there's no TV. They can't read shit. You know, they're cut off. It's like they're putting in a little thing, and they want controversy to start and just have people. Because when people don't have – I know when I don't have my phone, I don't have internet, I lose my damn mind. Mm-hmm. So I would be the guy that somehow would be starting a fight or getting my ass whipped because I was just losing my shit. And these guys this season, typically, they've been polite. They've been nice. So I think a lot of people are like, I'm not seeing the drama. I'm not seeing what else.
Between Joanna and Claudia, the drama this season.
And that's what it is. So now you got to find other ways to keep it exciting. I think the fact now they're bringing in champs, bringing people at such a high level, and then being able to come in there now and get a title shot, just for me as a fan, I feel like I should watch because these are the studs that I'm going to be seeing regardless of whether they win or not. These are people that are going to migrate and make their way. Just like you saw Phil went to the World Series of Fighting.
World Series of Fighting.
And it's, it's interesting.
Cream is going to rise regardless of whether they win or not.
And if you can take any solace out of the fact, it's probably that you're at the end of the season, assuming Demetrius doesn't fight before then, and even if he does, assuming he doesn't lose against whoever he could fight, you're probably going to get UFC title flyweight title fight on Fox Sports 1. Something like that on the Ultimate Fighter finale. They're damn sure not headlining that fight on a pay-per-view or something.
Speaking of what's tough is we are out of Frosty beverages over there.
Lord.
And unnamed UFC official has been waiting patiently for some dinner.
Yes.
And we have been tipped off on some fantastic sushi that we're going to go check out. We're going to do some churrascaria.
And we don't have those interviews that everybody's bitching about.
Yeah, I don't want those interviews that are played everywhere.
Just fucking cut this shit off.
Fuck it. Just, you know what? Thanks for listening.
Just go cut it off like that?
Boom, that's it. That's it.
It was done. I already said thanks for listening. Have you ever heard this podcast? That means it's over.
Wow, that was abrupt. Say it again. Say shut the fuck up. Thanks for listening.
Just tough talk.
Thanks for listening.